What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. You follow him at Sean Unfiltered, me at Adam G. Sager, the show at Unpaved on Rumble. Sean, we got a ton to talk about today. But let's quick pay off our poll questions as we start every show with. Yesterday's poll question, who's the next college football coach to basically get the axe? We saw Billy Napier get it at Florida. Your four options here are Brian Kelly from LSU, which we'll talk about later in the show, Mike Norvell at Florida State, Hugh Freeze at Auburn, Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. Now, there's a good chance, I would say at least there's a good chance two of those four are gone. I think there's a reasonable chance three, and it's not a bad chance that all four are gone by the end of the season once the season's over and they kind of everybody sits down and meets and the boosters and the AD and everybody get together. I think all four could be gone, but I think two of them are definitely gone.
We talked about this, and I would agree, Sags. I think I voted on Luke Fickell, even though when I don't pay attention to votes of confidence because I've seen this movie before. I just don't. The question is, do you want to part with all these guys? Norvell, do you want to part with them now and get started? You're going to fire the interim coach anyway, usually, and then bring somebody else in, or depending on changing the thought, like we were talking about Penn State, of getting somebody in there, even though they're not going to have a guy hired in the next for the recruiting. So people that are leaving you say, well, wait a minute, this guy's coming in. Well, let me reconsider this. So there's a lot that goes into it. Some of it's just, they, you know, do you want to pay? Do you want to, you know, you want to milk as much out of it as you can? I always wonder, Sags, with this, when are teams going to, when I say fight back, I know they put a big buyout on some bigger than others to make it very, very difficult. But I just wonder when they're going to say, you know what, we're not doing this. Will it ever reverse where you don't get where the prices start to go south again? And will teams start to fight back and say, you know what, I'm not firing you during. I'm going to milk through this and we're going to go. I mean, during a season, I always try to figure out what's the advantage. I think it's easier in the regulars in the NFL to do it, Sags, because recruiting has nothing to do with it. You know what I'm saying? I think it's easier optics to do it in the NFL during the season or in a professional sports team. I say professional, I use the term loosely because college football is pretty much there. They're paid like it. But the recruiting comes into play because it has to be, well, what if we lose guys and they think that this is a guy who's still going to be here if they don't have buy-in with him? Yet it's really hard to go hire a guy with half a season left or 5 weeks or whatever, half a season left. And you got an interim coach that's there, and you got a guy then the new coach hovering over you, you know. So there's a fine line. But to me, Luke Fickell, I think there's a chance that three or four of those, the buyout and the money that they owe to Brian Kelly is so big. I don't know. But I also, we would have said that about Penn State and Texas A&M with Franklin and Fisher as well. I don't know. And I think a lot of it has to do with the optics of how it ends, but I don't see a national championship team on there. And you know what I'm starting to discover? That LSU is not as good as we thought they were when the season started. They're just not. And that's just a fact. Regardless of the reasons, they're just not. So the question is, how long does LSU, should they be treated like Alabama and the rest of them? How long does LSU say, well, we haven't won a national title when, and we're paying this kind of money? And do guys flip and say, I'm going to quit paying $10 million a year. I can get a good coach for 5 or 6. Or are we at the point that that's a ship sailed, like players? You're going to have to overpay for anybody good at the college level or in the NFL. So I think there's a chance that three of those four are gone for sure, depending on what happens with the optics the last part of this season.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Brian Kelly here in just a little bit. But today's poll question, who is the best team in the NFC? And your four options are the Eagles, the Lions, the Bucks, and the Packers. Now, yes, can you put the Rams in there? 100%. But right now, after last night, and we'll talk about the game a little more in depth here in just a little bit, but I picked the Lions. I think the Lions right now are kind of humming the best. You know, their engine sounds very clean, and they're rolling. I know they had a hiccup, but just the way they play, I just trust as we move on. And really, when it comes down to it, too, I trust Dan Campbell a lot more than anybody. So that's why right now I would say the Lions. I think any of these teams, they're all going to play close with each other. but I just have a little more trust in the Lions at this moment with the way they've played this season.
Yeah, and we should have more trust in Nick Sirianni. The dude's been to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years, but I'm with you. There's still – but I think that he's probably underrated as a coach, and people say, well, look at the talent. Well, that's the goal, get good talent around good coaching. I picked the Lions as well after impressive I know we're going to talk about them. We hit Monday Night Football, Segs, but I was impressed with a lot of things they did, and I said the winner of that game yesterday – should come out, and we should probably think that they're the best team in the NFC, but the Packers are good. The NFC North is crazy. I mean, you could flip it and you could say, well, if the Vikings were able to go on a run, you know, they're pretty good too. And Detroit and Chicago and Green Bay are all formidable in the division. So the team that's not on there that is the obvious one, in my opinion, I know people talk about the 49ers and some other teams, but the Rams, if all of them were – you're not going to get a guy like Fred Warner back this year, but as healthy as you can get, meaning Puka with the Rams, you know, give me Kittle back with the 40. Mm-hmm. Okay, add a guy other than Fred to each roster. Tampa Bay getting a couple receivers back, sans what happened to Mike Evans last night. So add the as good as it gets, I guess. I would pick the Rams if I was a bet man to beat them all. I think the Rams are as good as there is in this league. And you talked about a coach you can trust. I think that you know you can trust that guy as well. But on that list right there, Segs, and it makes for good banter, your team might not be on there. And I know there's a couple other teams on there. The people I saw, one that said the 49ers, and this may be Shanahan's best coaching job with the way he's got this thing afloat doing it. Give me, Segs, give me the Rams that's not on the list. On that list, it's Detroit. And I think on both sides of the ball, they've proven it. And there's no more high-powered offense when they're going than those guys. I don't care who it is. They are, when they're going, they're really, really difficult to stop.
You want to talk about a high-powered offense. This Blue Jays offense can explode at any point and moment. And boy, did George Springer come up in the biggest moment last night in Game 7 in the 7th inning. And he hits a 3-run home run to put them up 4-3. And that's the final. I mean, just sitting back, and I've watched the video, I don't know, 5 times. There's and I forgot. I wish I would have saved it, the tweet. It's just the crowd noise. The whole at bat, it's just the crowd noise. There's no announcer talking. There's no – all you get is the ambience of the stadium. And, I mean, when he hits that ball and that crowd just, I mean, erupts, there's no cooler sound in sports than when that big home run, that crack of the bat, and then you hear the crowd. I still say that is the best sound in sports.
It's the best drama because of the buildup too. You know, they got the lead. You're up 3-1. It looks like it's going Seattle's way. And the questions, which we'll get to, Munoz or Bizardo, what are you going to do? And a guy who has got a flair for this, as he proved it in Houston. I can remember going into their first World Series, Segs, in 17. And late in the season, George Springer was struggling, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And he's a leadoff hitter. And going through that, I said, Ben, I think it was that season. I'm pretty sure it was 2017 that struggling. And everybody was saying, and I said, get him out of the leadoff spot, man. And I think in the previous series or earlier in the postseason, and A.J. Hinch, smarter than we are, he had struck out like 7 times in 11 at bat. I mean, he was struggling. Kept him in the leadoff spot. Well, that was, what, 5, 6 home runs in that postseason, Six. He has the flair for this. And, you know, he was sitting on it, and the guy's got great power from his position. You're right. And I think it was Joe Davis and Smoltz on the game, wasn't it, last night, Sakes? Was it Davis and Smoltz on the game? They let it breathe the way it's supposed to, even after, before and after the home run. And I'm with you. The sound of that bat in this moment – with two damn good teams and the way that Toronto fought back on the road and that, you know, the Mariners got theirs. This is how it's supposed to be, whether regardless. And then he knew it was gone and still got the little kid in him, obviously. And that's got to be people always – I've asked Segs, what's the best one? If you're like – for me, throwing a touchdown pass, hitting a walk-off home run, I got to believe that's it. Because I think a touchdown pass is fine, but, you know, somebody had to make a great catch. It just – it's you, pitcher, drama, catcher, umpire, and in front of your people, and you're sitting on it, and the second it cracks, and you know. I don't know. I think about Joe Carter, as we see the euphoria, and similar. I think it was bottom of the 7th down. Yeah. I think that it's eerily similar when you know, certain pitches are hit. I think it was Joe that did it, that was similar. But regardless, Springer and took Pizarro. And so the question that's going to be asked Dan Wilson is why not Munoz in the situation? And but I was that is a certain guys, regardless of the struggle, look for those moments. And Springer got a pitch he could drive and has done that plenty of times in the postseason. And now it's been a long time since Cito Gaskin's Toronto Blue Jays were in a position to win a World Series.
Yeah, it's 1993 is the last year. But yeah, that question for Dan Wilson is, you know, and it's not always just on the manager. Sometimes these closers, they don't like coming in the seventh. And whatever, you know, you want to say to me, I want my best guy in the biggest moment. And if you are a closer that I only want the ninth, then you're not my top guy. Like that's how I would look at it as a manager. I want a guy who says, give me the ball, game on the line, Springer's up. He can take the lead with one swing like we saw. And we knew going into that at bat, give me my best guy. And my best guy is Munoz. And if I'm Dan Wilson, I tell him, I don't care. I need you in my biggest moment, not the ninth inning. And Jeff Hoffman was awesome in the ninth inning yesterday with three Ks, the way he was working down and up with that splitter and then gets the slider to end. I mean, just incredible work by him. But yeah, that give me Munoz in that situation.
The last the swing and miss to end the game was a damn good pitch because I thought he was going to throw a blow cheese up there and just, you know, just try to challenge
like
him.
Like he did to the first team.
Had. That's exactly right.
I mean, up and right. Beat him.
He was like, here's my best, go hit it. And did he, boom, through, you know, Uncle Charlie'd him with that off-speed stuff. And
right.
Got him
especially when Julio laid off the splitter down to go 3-2. Right. I'm like, oh, he's got it. Right. You know, you got to put something in the zone or Julio's going to lay off. Yeah. And then we have the dramatics of Cal Raleigh up against Hoffman with, you know, the chance to take the lead. But Julio chased the off-speed pitch away and game over.
And trust me, Hoffman, of the World Series. He knew was coming to the plate. It's like, and earlier, you know, with the call with Suarez too, the argument, I mean, mm-hmm. He was really, really good. I, you know, Segs, I'm a guy, I'm with you. If I'm going to go down, let me go down with at least put an oar in my hand. Now, some could argue that Pizarro, who had pitched really well, he's been in high leverage situations. He's had a good season and he's used to the role, but I agree with you, used to the role or not. This was closer role stuff. I needed to get an out against a guy who's got a flair for this and has been big in the drama of this. And, hell, you could have handled a base hit and lived with it. But decisions, we've seen these decisions in the past. It happened in Tampa with Blake Snell years ago. It happened in Houston with, I can't remember who it was, when Hinch took a lot of flack for pulling. He pulled, was it Greinke? I can't remember who he pulled out, Segs. It may not have been Greinke, but was going well. We've seen the movie plenty of times. And you go with, and I know leverage, this is his role. But if I'm a closer, it may be the third inning. I got, you know, all hands on deck. I get it. I understand Dan Wilson as a catcher, why he would think, well, this is his leverage situation. He's been successful at it. We believe in it. And unfortunately, you got the best of Pizarro on that one. And now you're in a chase mode at the plate and you faced a guy who went and challenged him and got him out. And hell of a series, a hell of a dramatic win. And I'm sure George Springer felt a moment he'll never forget with those walk-offs. When we say walk-off, it basically, you still had to get him out. But in a situation that gave you the lead, it had every element of walk-off and boom, backflip and do it all. But he hit a pitch down, but that, you know, Springer knows how to go get it. And I think I would have gone to Munoz too. At the time, you're questioning and saying, well, what do you do? And then you say, okay, if he believes Pizarro can handle it, and had a hell of a season. But just the other guy, somebody's going to get the L in that, Segs, you know, in that situation. And an L might have even been, you know, if you can handle a hit. But the three-run job that gets you is the backbreaker. And unfortunately, you're dealing with a guy with tremendous power who's been doing it his whole career in postseason when the moment's presented itself.
World Series kicks off Friday at 7 in Toronto. Obviously, Dodgers, Blue Jays. There's going to be a lot of blue on the field. Just give me your quick thoughts heading into it.
For me initially, Segs, I think that you're going to have tremendous bullpen to to deal with the Dodgers. I'm talking about at the back, because you know they're going to be relentless, and they can be very, what's the word I'm looking for? It can fatigue a pitching staff, because you go through the lineup. It's like, this guy can beat you. This guy's, you know, up and down the lineup. Your stars are going to, Otani's going to have to continue that barrage that you saw when he, which made him a hero. Again, you know. But I'm leaning Dodgers. I can gain in six games, but the bullpen's going to rear its head large in this, and the Dodgers are hoping that they've got their back end of the bullpen settled in this. And if you're Toronto, you don't want to let this be where it's 4 or 5 run difference heading into the late innings, even though the bullpen, the Dodgers feel like it's short up. Advantage Dodgers. I just like to think Toronto's played well enough this year to hang in there, but I'm going to go Dodgers in six. And Segs, I didn't have them in the World Series when the season started, but here they go again. They're just, whether they're getting what they pay for, and that's production. Give me the Dodgers in six. Although Toronto's more than formidable. This isn't they can take a deep side. They expect to win it, and they played more consistent baseball than just about anybody in the American League for 162. They're going to be in it, and I probably trust their bullpen a little more than the Dodgers. But now that you've got Sasaki at the back end, I think they feel comfortable. Give me the Dodgers. Too much hitting, man. That's what I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm taking the Dodgers as well. And six games sounds right. I don't feel this one going seven, but who knows? I didn't think Seattle-Toronto would go seven. So that's the best part about playoff baseball. You never know who's going to show up and be the hero. And sometimes it's the big guys like Springer and Shohei. Sometimes it can be someone like Kiki Hernandez has been in the past. So
seen that movie before when he was in Boston, dude, where he just owned the postseason for the first series or two.
So earlier when we were talking about the poll question, you talked about how you thought the win last night gave the Lions the title of the best in the NFC. The Bucks, they lose 24-9. They lose Mike Evans to a concussion, to a broken collarbone. What does that loss do to that team who was on such a high going into this game, the way they've played all season long, the way Baker's played, and now we got this? What does this do to the team? Dogs are going crazy. They're pissed at Tampa for losing.
As we said here, there you go. We call that Matt sound. We answered Sager's question. What else do you want me to say, brother? I used to the distraction, but that's called live podcast.
Yep.
And that's 100-pound bully and a couple of shots.
They are going crazy.
I'm just trying to work. Okay, you want to come up here and say hi? Good gracious. Kilo, yeah. You were talking about the game last night. How Tampa overcomes it. Segs, I always laugh when people say, man, they've got four of their receivers down or three of their receivers down or two linebackers and a tight end. They'll be okay. Now, the burden to carry that a long time is tough. You're putting extra burden on the quarterback, who's been fantastic. The defense to get more stops. It's just the trickle-down effect. Listen, Toronto can hang in there because I love their quarterback, and they've got some good veteran and some great energy. But you can't keep being hurt and think it's going to be easy to overcome. So for me, how do they overcome it? People having out-of-body experiences like we saw a week ago when your 5 and 6 receiver are contributing. But if I took Devontae and AJ away from them, or Saquon away, I take McCaffrey, Kittle, eventually – it's going to catch up to San Francisco if they don't get healthy along the way. It just is. Listen, the Rams aren't throwing 5 touchdowns a week if Puka's not on the field for 70 plays, right? So it'll get you. It just does. I think Tampa's going to win the division, and I think if they get in, when they get in, they're dangerous because of that energy. And maybe by then, the majority of them are best to Mike Evans with the vicious hit to the turf last night with the collarbone and his doggone – or the clavicle, and then the concussion stuff. So, but Tampa's resilient, man. But Detroit's the best. And I'm going to tell you this, Siggs. Their defense – I believe their defense flies around every bit as much, if not better, than they did last year. I love the way they're playing football. And that goal line stand down the stretch and what they kept pulling out of their ass last night defensively to make play after play after play – that was the game ball to that team with all the good the offense does. I know they're going to score 28 or 30 a week. That's right. Who they are. The key is the stops and the energy they played with. That even may make them better this year when it gets to the postseason. Dangerous team, but don't forget those Rams again, as we talked about in the NFC.
The Chiefs, are they the scariest team in the NFL right now?
They are. Sags, a lot of people in this can't admit when they're wrong. After what I saw 2 years ago, then last year, and losing speed, and was like, okay, can't keep doing that either receiver-wise. And then how much they were playing bubble screen, side screen. Kelsey's probably games is falling off a little bit. That's okay. Right. He's in his mid-30s. That Mahomes, the production went down. The last 2 years, I can argue that the kings of that, aside from Mahomes and Andy Reid, have been the defense. The defense carried them last year. And then at the beginning of this year, like, gosh, they look awful. Then you get Worthy back. And you saw Rice's impact immediately in this past game. Kelsey looks like there's a little more energy with him as well. And now you got to deal with those guys. So now he's back to playing zone and dealing with a single team where he can win again. They can run it physically. Andy Reid's gotten to a rhythm. Mahomes looks like young and youthful and healthy. Everything about it. I said I didn't think they were going to be a Super Bowl team. I didn't think they were going to win the division, Sakes, with the fall off. Because, once again, the burden for the defense to keep doing what Spagnuolo does. And they do. And now the offense looks high-flying. They're the best team. Excuse me. They're the team to beat in the AFC. And a month ago, I would have laughed in your face and said, where are they going to get these points from, buddy? 16, 17, 20, 21. Nah, there's too many good teams. And then all of a sudden, Baltimore's beat up. Pittsburgh, the defense doesn't look very good. Buffalo looks a little bit vulnerable. You start to go down and look at the teams they've beaten. Then you start to look at Kansas City and say, experience, great play callers on both sides, a defense that rises to the occasion in big games. And now the Rice addition, commitment to running it at times, depth, and now the receivers, your first and second guy are now your third, fourth, or fifth guy, and those guys are back at it. This is a dangerous team, and yes, Segs, I don't know what the odds tell us. We talked about a little pre-show, but Kansas City has to be near the top by gamblers, saying that if they're not first, they're not going to be third in the voting when it comes to the gambling odds favoring them to get back to the Super Bowl, which I can't believe after what I saw the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, when was Patrick Mahomes at his best? When he had Tyreek Hill to stretch the field and then Travis Kelce underneath. Now he's got Rashee Rice. He's got Xavier Worthy. He's got Tyquan Thornton, who are all just speed guys that can stretch the field. And then you have Travis Kelce. You have Juju Smith-Schuster. You have Hollywood Brown. They are deep in the receiver collection. So, I mean, it's just they are dangerous. And, yes, you're right. Patrick Mahomes looks like a different guy. He looks
trimmer.
I can throw the ball again. Like I can take my shots now that Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy are back on that sideline in pads.
Trim. He's active. Move. There's an energy about him. The Chiefs don't look like they don't look bored. They look. Right. They honest to God. I don't know if that's just when things open up, you're like, oh my gosh, like getting LASIK when you're blurred. It's like, oh my gosh,
right.
I can see that Mahomes starts to see these lanes and there's spacing and team throw those slants that he used to throw and boom, one miss and the guys to the house with their speed. So and there's no better head coach in the league. They're just not. Dan Campbell's in the we love him and Sean McVay, but there's nobody better doing their job than Andy Reid has done his. Right. Andy Reid, I just. It is amazing what a little bit of speed, and then I'm sure Andy, like that weird scientist, gets in there, oh, look, I got this speed back again. I don't have to just play sideways football.
Right.
I can use the bandwidth of vertical play, and Mahomes is Mahomes. And I'll be damned if you said, Sean, here's $100,000, bet it on one team to get to just get there, let alone win it, Kansas City. And a month ago, if you'd have told me, I said, dude, I'll take that bet.
Yeah,
it's incredible the transformation they're making on offense. And so once again, back to my original. Oh, losing those guys, they'll be just fine. They got Mahomes. No, you need those guys. That's exactly right. So that's right. And here we go. And they're the poster child for that. For that
right. comment, they just I mean, are. It's just it's you like what you're seeing. You like to see Patrick Mahomes. I know a lot of people hate the Chiefs because they were so good and everything, but you want to see the best at their best, and that's what it all comes down to. And the Chiefs right now are looking their best.
They may not get home field advantage, but if you're going to go to February, the Chiefs are going to be in your way.
Yes.
They just
100%.
Are. Right, barring Sean, any stupid injury to the guy who takes snaps at center, right? So
Right. Yeah, that's injury. Always the caveat when it comes to the quarterback position and teams looking to get to the Super Bowl. But tell me about some crypto.com.
Well, man, dude, it is exploding on the scene, as we well know. Cryptocurrency is on fire. There's huge news. Trump media. has recently signed a massive $6.4 billion with a B deal with Yorkville Acquisition Corp and Crypto.com, the crypto platform trusted by millions of users worldwide. If you aren't into it, see, we went through that phase. Well, this, should we? Yes, you should. That news is off the charts. They're teaming up to acquire up to $6.4 billion CRO to establish America's first CRO, Treasury Trump Media Group, CRO Strategy. Once complete, the new company will be the largest publicly traded CRO holder out there, ready to join the crypto revolution. If you're not, you're going to be late to the party. Regrets suck. Don't be one. Sometimes we don't regret what we did do. We regret what we didn't. And crypto.com's got it going on. So head to crypto.com today and be part of this historic move. That's crypto.com. There's no need to wait. And remember, cryptocurrency continues to gain traction. And it's a major announcement with that $6.4 billion deal with Trump Media and Yorkville Acquisition Corporation. For more information on the proposed business combination, just check out Yorkville Acquisition or Acquisition Corp's public filings to go in there and validate what I'm telling you. Again, it's crypto. It's on fire. Don't regret not coming to the party. That's half the battle. Listen, they're taking you to the dance. All you got to do is go grab the partner, and that partner's crypto. Crypto.com, crypto.com today. Got to get that crypto, Segs.
Got to.
Got to do it, brother. There you go.
I'll take some.
I like it when it's got a B at the end of it. Six, and I'm not talking about biz notch. I'm talking about billion.
Billion.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. There you go.
I just can't imagine. Can you imagine just having billions of dollars?
I can. I absolutely can. And I know a few things I'd do I just want to do. So
give me like 2 weeks as a billionaire. I mean, just 2 weeks. That's all. Like,
okay, $100 million. How many? I mean, all of a sudden you the $100 million, and that's post taxes. You win a Powerball, or
right,
you're in a business and they sell it, you know, for you're a quarter partner in a business that sells for $1 billion, and you own 25%, so you make $250 million. What are you doing? I'm not sure. I wouldn't change my lifestyle. I mean, I'd ask, there would be signs. Boto Lake, but I'm not going to change my attitude towards giving and towards, like,
oh, 100%. Yeah.
I'm not going to be that guy that's that is an asshole, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
There will be signs, because there's a few things, you know, we all have toys we like and making a difference, right?
I always have said, since I was younger, about this conversation, if I had that much money, you'd never see me again. You'd never see me. I'd just be on some island, you know, that's my own, and just
swinging a golf club and going to the water.
Yep. Doing some drinking and just hanging out, just having all the family around that I can tolerate, and just, you know, have fun with it, you know, right. Just live life.
I want that. That's compound, like, do. Swim up pool on a barn dough with like a shooting on the property, shooting indoor shooting range. Dude, I've already got it planned. Aside from having the final drawings up, I already got it planned. So somehow, some way I'm winning, whether it's that or companies coming through like they want to, and you sell them, they do it. But I wouldn't change my personality, but I'd be on the lake on my boat all spring and summer long, and be riding my motorcycle, which I already do. So I wouldn't change a lot. I would just want it to be where all my buddies, like you guys, show up on July 4th and we're there, and everybody has a place to sleep in their own suite, right? So it'd be awesome. Barnuminium, where there's that, there's the guys where we're why we got this. We got the grill with the 40 different things on the grill, a swim up bar at the pool with TVs there, so you never have to leave the house for your staycation.
That sounds just incredible.
Yes, it
does. All right, someone give me $1 billion.
And a big walk in cigar, humidor, all that right there. And it's at the crib where you don't have to do anything. I have enough property, a go kart track in the back, so I can flip some ass on the July 4th reunion with everyone, all my buddies and family.
Hey, Jeff Bezos, whoever, just give us $1 billion. That's all. I mean,
what's a big deal? Won't hurt him.
It's easy.
Won't hurt him. Yeah, there you go.
Give us $1 billion. We'll take a fan question here. Isaiah in our comments says, Sean in the game, Love convinced LaFleur to go for it on fourth downs, fourth and two late in the game. There, you know, you kick the field goal. Or do you go for it and try and score the touchdown to take the lead, but by more? So then Arizona has to come back and score a touchdown. LaFleur puts the field goal unit out there. Timeout. oh, all of a sudden here comes the offense back out. They pick up the fourth down. Was there ever a spot in your career, college, NFL, CFL, that you can remember where it's fourth down and you're like, we have to go for this? And the coach is like, no, we're kicking the field goal. We're kicking the field. And you're on the sideline just begging whoever it is, just saying, we can pick up this yard or two or three. We can do it. Here's the play. Let's go. And you convinced them, and you went out there and you picked up the fourth down and went on to win the game.
Be surprised how many coaches do play into the emotion of it. Now, fourth and six,
right,
where it's like the coach, like, okay, it's like the receiver who's always open. Dude, I know you're open, but the last three times you've said it, you've been triple covered, but I love your energy about it. So that's what it's got to be judicious with it. But yes, I've been on a sideline where I've either been the quarterback, where you talk a coach in, let's do this. And then you say, man, what I do love, it's harder, Segs, if there's no timeout between the field goal decision and you going for it. You just say, we're keeping you guys, stay out there. I like timeout. We come over and you bring the team over and I want to get a feel for the big fellas, right? Because there is that emotion that says, you know what? There's a choice between being stupid and not being judicious where you run a poor play. But there's an energy that says, you know what? These guys believe, because I've always been a believer that if guys love a play, even though it may not be sound against that front, they'll find a way to get that first down. And then I've also seen where guys don't like the play call and it's designed against the perfect coverage and they don't get it. The believability, don't kid yourself, matters. And yes, it happens far more than you think. Coaches, what do you think they get talked into most of the time? It's the players or somebody in their ear, a coordinator, because most of them are going to be like, let's just take the points and move, especially if you just like, our defense is doing well. So there is an energy where you say, you know what? My guys believe in it this month. What do you guys like? Our best run, I'm killing this guy. And you go and you take your chances. So while I understand the points, I do love feeding off smartly in a down and distance situation where you get a feel for how the big boy, because really it's all, the emphasis is all on the big fellas. If you don't protect it or don't block it, doesn't matter what the play call is, ain't going to work. So yeah. I do like to get a feel for that. And yes, it's happened multiple times in careers, and you'd be shocked at how often the players do talk them in. Or at times, I can remember saying, I was in a game, came over there, and I said, let's just get in position. Our field goal kicker's great. All we need is three here to do it and kick the field goal to win. I mean, it eventually ended up being we put the clock down. We were smart. Let's just center it for him. Boom. Use this time up so they don't get it back. And it ended up working and winning. So, and the kicker, I think, was flawed at the time. So the flawed Reves, who was damn good. So it goes both ways. Talk him out of something silly and talk him into. Now, everybody, quarterbacks always want to go for it. But there is a time and a place that you got to be smart. And sometimes you got to keep them out of their own way, the players and the coaches. But I like that timeout where you get people and get a chance to think about it. What's the energy like? What are they like? Give me your best run. Let's go. And I do. I think coaches – I know coaches feed off that for a fact.
Yeah, for sure. I was also thinking, you know, we like to end the show now with a little bit of gambling talk, with a little bit of maybe some futures bets. And so I pulled up the futures odds on the Super Bowl winner this year. We're through 7 weeks. We're getting close to that halfway point. The trade deadline's coming up. And I was surprised to see the Kansas City Chiefs, who we just talked about being, you know, looking really good. They are the Super Bowl favorites right now at plus 500. Does that shock you?
I would think, Segs, if you would have asked me last week, I'd have said they're going to creep up into the top five favorites in Vegas. Mm-hmm. But give me a couple more weeks of it, and then they may be the best. Now, from my eyes, from me watching the AFC, they're playing better than anybody. They are the standard again. So that, but I guess I'm probably surprised that they just blew by the Rams and blew by Detroit and blew by teams that have been more consistent this year, right? They've been more consistent. But there's so much respect from Vegas and from all of us that the Chiefs don't have to do it 5 or 6 weeks in a row for us to feel they're back. They need to do it, although they've played well for the last 4 or 5 weeks, but they look like the Chiefs when they were dominating on both sides of the ball. So I'm not shocked, a little surprised that didn't take another week or so to convince them, but they've been so overwhelmingly good. And that's ass whooping they put on this weekend against the Raiders. So they shut them out, right, Segs? Even though the Raiders aren't good, they just keep mowing people over. I get it, and I'm with them. I'm with them. We may be a little premature, but the truth is, find me somebody in the AFC who beats them if they're all playing their best. Nobody right now.
Yeah.
They're not doing
top five teams right now with the best odds are Kansas City at one with plus 500, Detroit at plus 7, Buffalo at plus 750, Green Bay at +850, and then the Eagles round out the top five at 1,000. The one that just really caught me by surprise right here, and I just noticed it, was Baltimore +2,000, the Bucks +2,700. So they're telling you that Baltimore, and I think that speaks more to the conferences of the NFC is loaded right now. And we've always said that it's the AFC. It's AFC heavy. This year, it kind of feels like it's flipped. There's a lot of really good teams in the NFC. And Buffalo, Kansas City, Indianapolis. I mean, if you could throw a couple others in there. But right now, it really seems top heavy in the AFC, whereas the NFC is very loaded.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you know what's saying about that, too, is I'm trying to figure this out. Are we going to get this where every year we think Baltimore's a Super Bowl team and then they get the playoffs and let you down? And then now this year it's like, oh, they're injured. They got no shot. And they still got them damn near equal to Tampa Bay, who a week ago we had as possibly the best team in the NFC,
right?
Which is crazy when you look at it. And that speaks to what you're talking about, top heavy and deeper in the NFC. So wouldn't it be a 180-degree turnaround? Baltimore gets healthy and goes on a 9-game or whatever run, and before you know it. But the AFC does not have a dominant team, but the closest to dominate is Kansas City Chiefs. You know who the best bargain is there? Is the Rams. You're getting them at what? For the better. What, +1,200? That's a bit, because there are most right now, if you said you got to bet everything you own and you got no choice, a lot of people would take the Rams against the doggone Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And so while the Chiefs, we should have got the Chiefs about 6 weeks ago and said, yep, I'm putting this futures, the old futures Kalshi pick on him, right, Segs? Go in there and pick the Kalshi. I'm putting it all on the Chiefs. You dumbass, what are you talking about? Well, now how are you feeling about that? So the old business school 101, buy low, sell high, and the Chiefs are proving right now why you should have got them, all the good is good. And I think they do keep score, Segs. When everybody's talking about them, left them for dead, you and I included, especially, I mean, I did. When I say left him for dead, I left him for semi-breathing offensively.
Yeah, they're not. Here they not are. The team they used to be.
Right. That's it. Well, but they're looking like they're the team they used to be, back. Aren't they? Yep. You ain't lying, brother. So
here
I get
they
it.
Come. All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Sean. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. We'll talk a lot tomorrow, but I really want to hit on the Texans. Are they dead in the water in that AFC South?
Last night showed you again, and they've showed a lot out. Showed you again exactly who they are. And Seattle's a sneaky team in this big picture, say, to eliminate somebody else. But
another
the
team
don't have enough deep, offensively. Right.
Yeah, the Seahawks are another team in that deep NFC that's dangerous. And then I also, we've kind of talked about Georgia like we talked about the Chiefs. Well, here they come. Gunnar Stockton throws 4 touchdowns. They beat a really good Ole Miss team. Are they back to being dangerous?
Their fourth quarter looked like Georgia football, didn't it, brother? Their fourth quarter on both sides of the ball. And Ole Miss, Ole Miss looked like USC on defense. Like, are we ever going to tackle a running back in this game? You know, but
all you got to do is wrap up and pull them down, but they weren't doing it.
Boy, they were explosive in that half because I thought Ole Miss was going to – there was a point in time when I said Ole Miss may walk them if this continues and ban. But I don't like the wrath of Kirby Smart if I'm one of his players. So it's a smart move that they went and won this. But they are – Segs, don't look down. Get them into the playoff. You never know. They know how to win, man. They look and physical again late.
Two other teams we have to talk about, Texas A&M and Vandy. They're sneaky. Yeah. Sneaky with those two because they're kind of flying under the radar.
Vandy's not done winning, and Vandy, enjoy your coach. He's going to leave sometime in the near future.
Right.
I hate to say it, but he's going to. Yep.
Yeah, 100%. All right. We will be back at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk to you guys soon. Peace.
Boom.